The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless.
Dara Carroll, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you getting
nice
on?
Nice to meet you, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, you too, Ryan. It's very nice to speak to you.
Would you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from?
From Raphanum, Dublin, South Dublin.
And what age are you?
I'm 26 years of age.
So go back 10 years and take us to FX Buckley's on Talbot Street, would you?
Oh, so I got my first apprenticeship in butchery in FX Buckley's Talbot Street with Dara Buckley, an incredible butchers, very professional, very high-skilled craftsman, and a great way to introduce myself into the current culinary world.
What a great skill to have.
Amazing. Comes a long way and is widely very useful in a matter of different industries.
And do you find, an odd question, do you respect the animal?
Of course. You're respecting it by the way you're killing it, by the way you're respecting the meat, where it was grown, the way it was treated while it was killed, respecting the cleanliness, the cleanness, the freshness, the way it's wrapped, the way it's given to a person, the handling of it. Less packaging, more handling, more hands-on, talking to the person, talking about where the farm was, the farmer, the way it was grown, the fields that it was in, the mews, the dews that it ate.
So you go, you're tracing it right back to the grass that the beast is eating.
The less people we can have from the producer to the hands, the more hands food goes through, the more toxic food gets.
But you didn't stick with the butchery?
No. I was inspired to travel and always had a fire in me to travel around the world. So my ticket, I was thinking in a city there's probably two or three butchers, but in a city there's probably 200 restaurants. So if I can get around in the restaurants, I can go anywhere. It's kind of my ticket to the world.
Very good.
It was the cooking.
So you studied a bit of culinary arts?
Yeah, I was in IT Tala for just 6 months. Mm-hmm. While I was in IT Tala, I started to get enrolled in very good kitchens in Dublin. Fate Street Social being the first one by Dylan McGrath.
Yeah.
Then from there, I moved on to the Greenhouse with Chef Mikael Vienne. And then from there, I got such an experience in the Greenhouse, such a professional experience. I knew my standard of food had risen dramatically quite a lot. So I was very confident going into kitchens around the world and saying I had a lot more experience than I would have had on paper.
Yes, because so well-rounded.
Well-rounded and had been taught by a very, very good chef.
And the Greenhouse, I understand, has a reputation for Nordic food.
Yes, he's from Finland himself, so he has a lot of Nordic traditions and a lot of Nordic techniques within his food. And an incredible chef, the most talented man I've ever seen.
And lots of foraging.
Lots of foraging, lots of wild ingredients, really using the seasons and really seasonally based local produce.
So you got all that kind of cooking and that experience under your belt. And where did you head for then? You sound like a man with itchy feet and wanderlust.
Yes. This is where I kind of, I headed off for Canada. There was a few mates of mine at the time. They were heading to Canada. So I headed to Canada with them. Started working in a few different restaurants and there. I was kind of jumping around restaurants from here to there at the start.
Yeah.
Then settled in the Barefoot Bistro in Whistler for 6 months. Very good fine dining restaurant in a ski slope. Beautiful place. From there, just kept going. Then I went down to Mexico City, flew straight into Mexico City. I save up when I'm in kitchens. And then I go journeying and I budget my money really well. I'm on the road. I have a tent. I cook outside. I forage as much food. I recycle as much food that's being wasted. I really live as much off the land as possible. Now I'm talking about urban foraging, where supermarkets waste so much stuff that you could basically live for nothing and travel for nothing if you're hitchhiking and camping. And
what do you?
So I ended up going
down
to Mexico City, down through South America, Peru, Colombia, Ecuador, and then after all this, kind of went back to Dublin, settled down a bit, and then headed to Scandinavia.
Okay, we'll go to Scandinavia in a moment. Just quickly, I want to ask you about urban foraging. Now, that's not looking for berries and leaves. And
No. Our society has a very disrespectful way of thinking about how we distribute and use food and packaging. So we waste an awful lot, tons and tons and tons. every single day goes into our bins. And I'd be looking at the bins just sick of what's in them. Even though I'm like, happy days, there's better produce in here than I could buy. But at the same time, you're looking at it being like, there's something really wrong here.
So if you're urban foraging, where are you looking for? Is that you looking for your dinner?
Yes, that's me looking for my dinner.
And where do you find it?
In all sorts of bins around the back of Tesco's, Lidl's, Aldi's, all the superstores who are in our country and are creating this waste and this distributing unnecessarily, kind of becoming a vampire to our society itself.
Okay, and you eat well, I take it, from the bins?
Yeah, like at the moment, like at the trip where we're going now, there's a lot of different people who are kind of contributing, and there's a lot of local communities, a lot of local farms who are kind of contributing to our journey now at the moment. So we're not so much kind of going through that path. But when I was traveling South America, when I started traveling and I was understanding the techniques of travel and I was understanding how to budget and how to utilize the waste of others, I then got into these different techniques of traveling.
Well, take us then, you mentioned Scandinavia, which I'm kind of an interest in Scandinavia. I'm not sure why, it just seems like such a deep, fascinating, cold, beautiful place. Where did you go for? And tell me, let's go and meet the pirate, will we?
Okay.
Let's meet the pirate. I want to meet the pirate with you.
Yeah, we go straight to Richard. So I met Richard. I was sitting on a harbour one day. So I'm sitting on the side of this harbour.
In Norway.
Storm is just coming. In Norway, yeah. So this is the east coast of Norway, a harbour called Arendal on the east coast of Norway, just west of an island called Tromøya. So I was working in Tromøya. I meet this pirate. He sails into the harbour on this black, rustic boat that looked like it didn't seem to... It wasn't looking like it was meant to float at this stage. It was banged up black. Yeah. And this big, huge... tattooed pirate gets out with a huge chain of Thor around his neck. And I'm fascinated about kind of, I'm journeying at this stage and I'm manifesting different things and this boat pulls up. And then I'm like, the symbology of him, the boat and everything, I was like, I have to talk to this man. It's just meant to be.
Yeah.
So I go over, I start talking to Richard, which is his pirate's name. And he has big gold teeth and I'm talking to him and I'm telling him that when I was in Mexico, I had a bit of a cooking or a sailing experience. And then he was like, I could really use a deckhand, you know? So I was like, he was like, happy days. If you could spend 2 days, we're going to go 50 miles south. And during this journey, when we're going 50 miles south, he tells me, he's like, did you see this big fire that was in the harbour? And I said, no, I didn't see any fire in the harbour. I didn't know what you were talking about. Because the harbour was a 3 mile inlet in and a tree. So it was a 6 mile offset from his journey to go into the harbour that day. And he only went in because he thought there was a boat on fire or there was a car on fire in the harbour. Mm. But when he went in, I was just sitting there. Now, this clicked in my mind because I was manifesting this fire of fertility in my mind. So when it went around to this, the reason why he went into the harbour was the fire. And the symbology that was in the boat, it all just clicked in my mind of what was actually happening. So then I tell him about the visions I'd been having on the island while meditating around these sacred sites. And then he's like,
whoa, sorry, Derek, I'm lost you a little bit there. Tell us about the why were you having visions and of what?
So I was doing a lot of meditating around stone circles and I was in a place of heightened, abundant nature.
Holy smokes.
There's more microorganisms, more insects, more intellectual life really flourishing in this place. So I was lighting a lot of fires here. And the message that was coming through me every time I was lighting these fires was that I had to carry this sense of abundant fertility from one place of enormous balance to another place which has lost its balance and lost its fire. So I had to carry that fire physically. Now, this is going through my head and it doesn't settle in my head very well.
Yeah.
But when a pirate comes along and offers you a boat, wood, power tools and everything you need to accomplish this mission, you're kind of like, well, I didn't really think this was going to happen, but
the pirate changed everything.
Yeah, the pirate kind of trusted me along the quest and was like, here boy, you're going out to sea, I have the ticket and you're going
and you're
going to
go. So did you have to get a physical flame?
Yes, I have been burning a physical flame, a fire, for the last 10 months.
And you're bringing it from Norway to
the Hill of Ishnok.
in Ireland.
Yeah.
On the basis that Ireland is imbalanced. Is that, am I keeping up with you?
Yes, 100% imbalanced within the ecosystem, and our land is being completely, well, not appropriately used.
Right.
For the level of fertility that's underneath the ground.
And what will the flame enhance the land or what have you?
The flame is an inspiration for the people who are working the land to rethink their ways and their knowledge of profit. And for the natural wildlife, it's an incense for fertility for the birds and the bees to learn and to become part of a symbiosis of balance that will be created from the centre of Ireland, pulse from the centre of Ireland out to the world.
Now tell me then, Dara, about getting from Norway with the flame of fertility and the pirate to Ireland. Did you sail with the pirate, or did you tell him to beat it, or how did that work?
No, he was a very busy man.
Okay.
He was up to all sorts of things.
I'd say he was. His job description would suggest that.
Yeah. He had lots of things going on. So I took a solo journey from the East Coast to the West Coast, where I was going to pick up a crew on the West Coast of two.
Yeah.
Now, when I got to the West Coast of Norway, that crew kind of fell through, and I ended up with one Danish man. He was a 45-year-old man with a little bit of sailing experience. We had our first attempt to get from Norway to Shetland. So our first attempt failed dramatically. We got caught in a huge storm. The whole boat got smashed. The engine, the battery fell from the engine room, blended into the engine. The whole battery melted in half. And this is when your boat is rocking completely, almost capsizing from side to side. And I'm in an engine room trying to pull a battery that's melting in half out of the engine.
So where was the flame? Where's the flame of fertility at this point?
The flame of fertility is in a stove burning. And then the Danish guy, he knocks over the chimney for the fire. So then, in the midst of a chaos where the boat is filling up water, I'm bailing out without with buckets. There's an open fire in the boat and there's smoke pumping through the cabin. And the Danish man, he's like totally on for the calling the rescue service. And I'm like, it's okay, we will make it back. And we did make it back in today. I calmed him down and it was all fine. We went 14 hours out and it took us 15 hours to get back. And we made it back.
So you were back to square one, back to pier one, harbour one.
Back to square one, harbour one, with a smashed up boat, a broken engine, and thinking, what am I doing?
Okay, but you sound like the kind of guy who's just going to keep going.
And
you did.
Yeah, because, see, for me, I realised that the energy I was carrying had to be carried solely by me, or else it wasn't going to work. You needed the full belief going through the full boat to really flow with the elements that was necessary.
Okay, so you took that energy and you channeled it into having another go at this expedition back to Ireland. So how did you get here?
So 10 days later, I made it across to Shetland very safely, 4 days, no sleep, straight across, traditional boat from Norway to Shetland. There, from Shetland down to Fair Isle down to Orkney Isles. Orkney Isles attempted to go around Cape Wrath, got caught in a storm at Cape Wrath, the northernmost point of Scotland, hugely dangerous sailing quarters. You have a minch coming in, combining with a North Sea, creates a lot of unpredictable weather.
Yeah.
Got caught in a storm there, boat went down, had to sail down the back of a lock, ended up having to bank the boat in the back of a lock in Storm Brendan, was shipwrecked there for 2 months. In the middle of the Highlands in January and February, heightened winter in the Highlands.
I'm having trouble keeping up with you, not because you're not telling the story well, you are telling it well, but it's just such an adventure. I ask you, what class of nautical experience had you, Dara?
Well, now I have a lot, but at the time...
You've acquired a lot, but before you set sail on this crazy expedition...
I was sailing in Mexico, so I was cycling through Mexico on a little girl's bike at one stage with a tent.
Of course, you were.
I stopped off at a cafe where a man asked me, did I want to go on a sailboat tour? So a man asked me, I said, no, I'm on a budget. And he was like, well, I need sailors for a season. Can you really be a sailor? And within 2 weeks, I was taking 4 tourists out on sailboats with no engines, 2 tours a day, packing their lunch, packed lunch.
All right, sailing. So you had a bit of, you know, you had sea legs anyway. So bringing you back then to you were in the Highlands. Were you living on your own in a tent foraging?
Yes. So okay. I was stuck on the rocks. A load of lads came. A load of fishermen. The community and the local people up in the Highlands. You wouldn't. I haven't Well, everywhere is amazing, but in the Highlands particularly, you have a community of survival. The local people have survived there and worked together to survive for thousands of years, so they still inherently hold that. So when I was stuck on the rocks, they seen me as part of their family and took me in that way. And they were all picking periwinkles on the seashore.
Oh, yeah,
now, in wintertime, periwinkles are 350 a kilo. So it's quite good price in the winter. So I ended up filling up sacks because I had nothing else to do because I had to wait for a full month for a next full moon for another high tide for my boat to float.
Okay. And can I ask you about what class of vessel your boat was?
It was a traditional Colin Archer, very highly renownedly known in Norway. Probably one of the highly most renowned boats in Norway. It's a traditional wooden, fully wooden Colin Archer used by the IRA to gun run back in the rebellion.
Okay. Well, you're covering all the bases here. Let's get then away from the periwinkles and the hospitable Scots and move to Ireland then. So you get the full moon, you're back on the boat, no guns, just you, bit of forage food, and you're on the move again.
I'm on the move again. I made it to, eventually made it down to Valentia Island.
Ah, did you see any puffins?
Lots of puffins. I was there at Skellig Michael.
Come on.
And there was hundreds of puffins. I sailed right out and around Skellig Michael with the fire.
So the fire is still going at this point?
The fire is still going
right
now.
This is the flame
now,
of fertility.
I'm currently in Carnahalla, the lost palace of Brian Boru at the moment.
Which is where?
Which is in between Doon and Capel White, Limerick, and Tip border.
And where are you living, or where did you sleep last night?
Last night I slept under a tarp with the fire.
It sounds gorgeous. Were you cold or hungry or any of these things?
We're on top of a mound that kings used to be anointed to hundreds of years ago.
And
on top of
Go on.
The mound in Carnahalla, there's an underground passage tomb, and we're actually on the top of it, camped with a tarp, and we have the full cart and the horse.
And you had a bit of experience with the horse and cart before, didn't you?
Yes, I was living with Paddy Hanley for a while, and I was just helping him around the farm, and he has many, many highly knowledgeable tricks of the trade that I learned with my time with Paddy.
When we started our conversation, I thought, you know, people listening probably thought this is going to be about cooking and, you know, how you became a chef and won an award in Paris or something. But turns out you got what you needed from the butchers. You got what you needed from the restaurants you worked in. And you've been on this absolutely bonkers and beautiful trip around your head and the world. What is it? Who are you following, or what are you following? Why are you doing all the things so many people would love to do but aren't, because we're all so constricted by societal demands and norms?
So the way I look at it is, over the last couple of years and over the last few places I've been travelling, I've been training myself to find my intuition, my inner voice.
Yeah.
Who is the inner voice speaking? Eliminate all the other things that are going to distract you or catch you or catch your mind or make you doubt or make you fear or make you think it mightn't be. So finding that confidence in your intuition might seem mad, because your intuition is going to go against a lot of logic that is going to speak to you consistently. So I've been training myself to learn to freely and fully, without any fear, follow intuition, no matter who around you or what is happening around you. Follow that voice. So that takes a lot of meditation and a lot of deep thinking to be able to connect to that depth of knowledge which is in us all.
And what would
but
you
connecting
what,
to it is quite difficult.
This might be a stupid question. I'm not trying to be smart, but what do you hope to achieve with that connection, if I can ask it that way?
With the connection is a more in tuned life,
okay,
with nature and balance, and my environment around me portrays my inner environment.
There's so many places to go here, but let's keep you. You're in Limerick at the moment. Where's the flame of fertility going to end up?
In the Hill of Uisneach, Westmead,
in Westmead,
centre of Ireland, the oldest ceremonial site in Ireland.
So you're heading for there now, are you?
We are heading for there now.
And how are you getting around Ireland?
I have a horse and a 120-year-old spring cart from Lyon.
And people will pass you by and say, when you say we, are you in company?
Yeah, I have a great crew here at the moment. There's a few of us there waving over now at the moment.
That's
and
a,
we're
plus
in
on the best.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. A lot of people come in. There's a lot of skills to be learned. There's how to set up tarps, how to pack up camp, how to take down camp, how to cook on the spot, cook roadside, you know, chop wood with axes precisely, efficiently.
Would you eat roadkill?
Yeah, I had a fox there the other day.
And what did that taste like?
Absolutely beautiful. Now, if I was cooking again, I'd cook a bit longer. Mm. I grilled the whole thing on a spit.
And not too
and glazed
tough,
it
no?
up with a wild herb butter that I was constantly glazing. I finished it with honey. But after I cooked it, it was a bit tough.
Yeah.
But next time, I think slow braise and then flash it on the grill just after.
And what, as a butcher, you'd know what best part of the fox to go for. What was the most edible?
For me, the legs were nice. Really, really nice. The loin was also very beautiful. But again, a slower cooking, really low temperature, really longer time.
You'll know for next time.
I'll know for next time, the next time one, because it just got a clip about a half an hour before.
Oh, so it was fresh enough then.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah. Fed six of us, I think.
Good on you. I mean, that's absolute using what's in front of you, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So, and then we had a salad of wild sorrels, hazelnuts and apples from a tree locally. So I made a beautiful salad of wild sorrel, hazelnut and apple all mixed together with some honey and lemon juice.
I want to watch this program. I want to watch you going around Ireland just doing what you're doing. I like your style. I like your philosophy. I like your not giving a damn. It's kind of earthy.
Yeah, you know, and Ryan, the best way, I think, to actually experience what's actually happening here is to come out with us and spend a day chopping the wood, getting into the ground, getting into the graft of it, because it's not easy, you know.
I would do that. I would do that with you.
Yeah, 100%. And you're very welcome.
Thank
you. Because to really get into it, you kind of have to be there and be on the road, packing the bags, loading up, loading down, setting up camp, chopping the wood, because it's a lot for one team to manage and for... And you're keeping a fire going 24 hours a day.
The flame of fertility has to be kept alive, Dara. So what happens when you drop the flame on the hill? Do you have another gig planned, or are you so day-to-day that God knows?
So I'll be putting out there for a really good Irish production team, because I've filmed everything from day one
up to
now.
Oh, brilliant. Well, listen, you'd be a fool not to make this programme.
Yeah, so I have full footage. And over the last few months, we've gotten better cameras and stuff involved. So just putting that out there now, if there was any good, really good production teams, if they'd like to get in touch, I have amazing footage of the whole journey from very start up to now.
We'll put them in touch with you, Dara, if they get in touch with us. They will. There's great feedback to your chat with me this morning. Derry was on to say, Jesus, this guy's brilliant. I'd listen to him all day. He's like a nomadic Michael Harding. Another says, I'm not sure what I think, but I really think that man should put his experience in a book. I'd really like to read that book. And that young man sounds like St. Paul's experience, being shipwrecked, etc. Siobhan says, I love this guy. And Roisin says, Roisin Ingle, our old friend, says, there's a very cool guy on the show now, and I don't know what it is, but his talk of visions and pirates and fire and fertility and meditations is really lighting a flame in me. And I'm here for it in a big way, and I need to find out his name. His name, Roisin, is Dara Carroll. And Jenny was on to say, what a unique and interesting young man. He's the sort of person who will always find adventure because he has such a beautifully childlike mind. I love this guy, says another. He sounds like a real free spirit. I've only ever met one other, a guy in the Everglades who had built a two-story bike with a basket in the first floor for his dog. And when I met him, they had already cycled 1,500 miles around the US. I would love an adventure like that, but constraints such as mortgage keep me locked down. Darren, let's talk again, okay?
Fantastic, Ryan. You're more than welcome to join us at any time. Just let us know and we'll get you on the road, bye.
Well, as soon as those the restrictions allow, I will join you for a day just to get into the whole spirit. I'll do the radio show. I'll head straight to you guys in the camp, hang out, and we'll see what happens.
Fantastic.
All right,
Ryan.
Darren, lovely to make your acquaintance.
You,
mind yourself.
Thanks very
see
much
ya.
For everything. Talk to you soon.
Good luck. Bye bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
At 8 minutes to 10.